You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey guys, on this episode, we go over the state of the Giants. We look at some offseason moves, how those have played out, what's going on now, and the future outlook of the team. Apologies in advance. There's a couple quick background appearances from Chris's dog. So we tried to take those out as much as we could. It's still a little bit in the background, but it shouldn't take up too much. So I hope that doesn't really distract you from this episode. So let's get into it. Hello, and welcome to the Big Blue View podcast. I am Dan Pizzuta, joined along by Chris Flum, and we are coming with a bonus episode this week that, I don't know, might not feel like too much of a bonus as we get into it, because we're going to be talking about the state of the Giants. This is a team that is 1-5 right now. There is not a lot going right. We're going to kind of talk about how we got here, what the current prospects look like, and where they go from here. This is going to be a quite an episode. So how are you feeling about this, Chris?
State of the Giants, confusion. The Giants look and feel like a deeply, deeply confused franchise. They don't know who they are, they don't seem to know where they're going, and they don't seem to have much of a clue about how to get there. How's that for an opening thought?
All right, getting started on a good note. The plan, and I think we can get into whatever the plan was, has not worked to this point, but we'll see how that goes. Before we get into that, let's take a brief detour into some roster news that came out. The Giants have been tinkering with like the back half of the roster really since training camp, and a lot of that happened again on Tuesday morning. A couple players put to IR, Cody Latimer to IR, Ray Armstrong to IR, Grant Haley, cornerback out of Penn State, got promoted from the practice squad.
Wide receiver Benny Fowler, formerly of the Denver Broncos, was added. And they also promoted linebacker, and I sincerely hope I don't butcher this, Ukeme Eligwe from the practice squad.
Yeah, so there we go. Just a whole bunch of roster moves at the bottom of the roster. Haley is actually a guy I'm pretty excited about. He was someone I liked coming out. He was someone the Giants put a lot of effort into signing as an undrafted free agent. And then he didn't make the initial roster, was then signed to the practice squad. He can play the slot. He's 5'9", but he can play outside. So we'll see. Dante Dion also cut as part of that move. So Haley will slide in, is probably the fourth cornerback. I guess B.W. Webb is still the starter in the slot for now. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, just a lot of roster turnover. And that has been, that's been something we've seen a lot since Gettleman really took over. And I don't know, maybe that's something we can kind of talk about here is this was kind of a roster we were told, and whether we believed it or not, some of us believed it less than others, that this was a roster that was going to compete, but also it was a roster that was completely getting turned over at the bottom half of it, like almost every day from training camp on. So I'm not quite sure how those two ideas coexist with each other and how they were supposed to, but clearly they have not.
Yeah. You know, the Giants have made so many moves since Dave Gettleman was hired that, you know, at each step you could sort of see the rationalization for each move in a vacuum in and of itself. But if you take a step back and you look, I know myself and more than a few people just about every day of the offseason, we're going, what is Dave Gettleman doing? What is the plan? And after you ask that 100 or so times, you kind of have to wonder, is there a plan?
That's definitely a fair question. And yeah, you can look at a lot of these moves and have a rationalization for each move individually. But fitting them together, it's just, it doesn't really go into any cohesive plan. It sometimes just feels like it's making moves to make moves. But I think when we look at this, I think we can go back and to find out where the Giants are right now and why they are where they are. Right, we can go kind of all the way back to before
last December.
Yeah, we can go back to that, but maybe we don't need to go that far. If we stick to this season, we can go back to just the process of hiring Gettleman. To me at the time even seemed flawed, and I think we can kind of say it was a hiring process that I'm not totally sure was an open process. I mean, they hired Ernie Accorsi to be a consultant. He recommended Dave Gettleman, who he's worked with forever, and that's just kind of, you know, how the NFL works. You're friends with somebody, they get hired to help hire for a job, and the friends and whoever you're familiar with gets put up to the front of the line. And that's kind of how the Gettleman hiring process worked.
Yeah, who else did the Giants interview? They interviewed Louis Riddick and Kevin Abrams, who was the interim general manager, who had basically been with the Giants the third longest behind Gettleman and Jerry Reese. I would agree, it was a deeply flawed process, because Gettleman, you know, sitting here, we can't say whether or not he was the correct choice, because they basically didn't really look at anyone else. Gettleman really didn't face any competition. And that's basically where they started. I suppose they could say they wanted to get their general manager in first so he could hire his coach, and they didn't want to miss out on any of the good coaching candidates, but they didn't hire Pat Shurmur until...
I got something to tell them about that.
Yeah. Until the last minute.
Something else that hampered the process is, and probably we're going to talk about this subject way more, was the presence of Eli Manning. I don't think anyone who had replacing Eli as their plan A would have been seriously considered. And I think that's something that probably cut down on the prospects of people they were going to hire as general manager, and probably the people who they were going to hire as head coach.
Yeah, John Mara was definitely reacting to the firestorm that came from the, I'll say, half-baked decision to bench Eli Manning by Ben McAdoo. I'm not saying it was entirely a wrong decision, but doing it for Geno Smith, who nobody thought he was going to be an answer going forward. He was going to be a guy the Giants could basically turn the keys of the franchise over to, even as a bridge. But they also never back then gave Davis Webb even the practice reps that they could have even taken a look at him. So it was just a flawed process based on a flawed premise, and that's a bad way to start the next era of your franchise.
Yeah, everything around that just was not handled the correct way. Moving on from Eli would not have been, you know, the wrong way, but of course, I don't think we have to get too far into, you know, whatever McAdoo had decided he was going to do going into that Raiders game, and then pulling Manning at the half, whether they were up or not. It was just a whole mess. So, you know, that led to McAdoo and Jerry Reese getting let go. That led to Dave Gettleman. And then as soon as Gettleman came in, he started reworking this roster into, you know, what he wanted. And I think even as we just look back into some of the moves he did, you know, you could see there was a flawed process behind really a lot of it. And before we even get into the draft, some of the free agency and some of the trades that he made. And as we look at this team right now, it is a team that is 1-5. It is clearly a team that is going to need to rebuild. Do not let anyone tell you this was the plan.
No.
It was not. The Giants did not take the route they did and draft Barkley second overall so they would be bad enough to take a quarterback again this year. That was not the plan. This was supposed to, I'll put that in quotes, because a lot of people could have told you it was not. But this was supposed to be a roster that was going to compete, or at least be around 500. Although being 500 probably would have been first case scenario, because they would have just been lame ducked just kind of everywhere. So ending up 7-9 or 8-8 is probably the worst case scenario for this team. But this was supposed to be a team that was going to compete. You don't take a running back second overall if that's not the case. You don't trade for someone like Alec Ogletree, who has a massive cap hit as an inside linebacker. You don't do that if this isn't going to be a team that's going to compete in the near future. And I think we can, as we look into some of these specific moves, I think we can look at this Ogletree trade, because I think that was another one of those really flawed process trades. Now, I'm all for trading draft picks for veteran players. I think right now that is the biggest market inefficiency in the NFL. Teams have no idea how to value veteran players by draft picks. And typically, you can get a very good player for a pick that you would not have been able to get that same type of player. It happened. Look at what the Eagles did with like half their roster, honestly. But right now, Michael Bennett is on their team. They traded a fifth round pick for him. That is incredible. But with those type of trades, you want to get the type of player that cannot be replaced. And another thing, when you just look at this type of roster, like inside linebacker and running back are two positions you can get easily replaceable production later in the draft. So trading a fourth and a seventh for Ogletree, who has needed his cap number redone because it was going to be $10 million. And when you took his roster bonus and pushed that back into years, that pushed his cap number down this year, but it pushes more money into future years. And what the Rams did is they have his roster bonus for next season, for the 2019 season, was guaranteed on the third day of the 2018 season. So now that's more guaranteed money for Ogletree, which is either going to have him be an $11 million cap hit next year, which is going to be the third highest among inside linebackers, or the Giants have to restructure his contract again, which pushes more money now into 2020, which will keep Ogletree on the roster for 3 years. And that's just paying a lot of money for a position that does not need to be paid that much money. And I think that's, when you look at a lot of the moves, that's what has happened for this roster too.
Yeah, well, the Giants made the conscious decision to go with the old school option in Dave Gettleman. And the old school is just, it doesn't have much regard for efficiency. You know, we have that picture of him miming a stats nerd while he mocks analytics.
Yeah, while he mocks analytics, and that's something I took personal offense to.
Yes. You much more than I absolutely recognize it as a viable, valuable tool. I just have never gotten along well with statistics going back to grade school math class.
Right. But yeah, that was in his press conference after the draft, talking about taking a running back second overall and the positional value that comes with it. And he says he doesn't consider positional value, took the best player. And I guess we can now go into that draft. When we look at Barkley, man, very good player. No one who was against the pick, again, I've said this on the podcast many times already, no one who was against Barkley second overall was against Barkley, like, personally. No one was saying
Barkley there were a couple. There were a couple who didn't believe that as a runner, he was good enough to justify being above, like, Sony Michel or the runner out of LSU, whose name momentarily has slipped my mind.
Sure, Darius Geis. Darius Geis, thank you. I don't know who those people are, but they were wrong. but also, yeah, so, I mean, you can look at the boom and bust thing and maybe not like that, but his ability as a receiver, like, he is a good player. But having a great player at running back is just not how you build a good team.
Not in the 21st century.
And again, we can look at this, and I think we can talk about whether they should have taken a quarterback, and, you know, maybe we can get into that. But taking a quarterback was not the only option. Trading back was also an option, and that probably would have been the preferable option, especially if they were saying, we are going to go with Eli Manning in this season. Fine, if that was what was going to be decided on from ownership on down, fine, then you could have traded back, and you could get more picks. You could have gotten more picks in 2018, more picks in 2019, and built a roster that, since you have already basically admitted does not have a lot of depth just by the amount you are turning this roster over. So more picks in 2018, more picks in 2019 would have set this team up better for the future than arguably even a quarterback at number two would have. But Gettleman did not even apparently
consider it.
Entertain that option.
Yeah, and the Jets came out and said after the draft that they never even bothered calling the Giants about the second overall pick because they knew it really wasn't for sale.
That's insane. That is a flawed process, and that's not even flawed process. That is a detrimental process. How you couldn't have even considered trading back to get more value from that pick to help the team more in the long run. That's insane. Yeah. That's still insane to me.
It's another one of those efficiency things. I believe when it comes to finding value, there have been studies on this. I was actually reading into it as I wrote my piece yesterday about taking advantage of the NFL's trade inefficiency at the trade deadline, trading, you know, mid or late round picks for established veterans, young veterans who still have upside, who are still on their rookie contracts, who could help the team for years to come. But the teams they have now don't really know how to use them or know how to value them. Trading back is generally the most efficient way to, as long as you make smart picks with the picks you acquire and don't make stupid trades, it's basically the most efficient way to run a draft. You get a much better chance of finding a starter if you have two picks that are only slightly less likely to land a starter than your one high pick.
Yeah, you get more chances to take those picks. Now, I'm not totally sold on, you know, the Cleveland idea of continually just trading back and trading back. But when you're doing eventually that in a single draft or two drafts, like, that's fine.
Every draft pick is a lottery ticket, and your best chances come with more picks with at least similar chance of paying off.
Right, and it's something that guys of Gettleman's era do not completely understand. They look at a player, they fall in love with the player, and go, no, this is the guy we want. And that's exactly what they did with Barkley. There was no talking Gettleman and the Giants out of the Barkley pick at number two. And again, he's a very good player for the long term of the Giants. And now, especially since we see this is not a good team, this is a team that is going to have to rebuild. By the time you do that, Barkley, who is already one of the top paid running backs in the league, is now going to be going into his second contract where he's going to make even more money. And if you're talking about inflated cap hits now that are holding the Giants back, wait till they have to face whether they're going to pay their running back $14 or $15 million a year. That's not going to help either.
Hell, 5 years down the line, they could be considering having to pay him $17 or $18 million a year.
I was going a little conservative on that, but yeah, by as the cap hits,
if he starts resetting
in future years, yeah.
If he resets the record books like it looks like he is on pace to be doing, he could have an effect on his position similar to what Odell Beckham had on the wide receiver position. That's something we're going to have to consider to be a potential reality eventually.
Yeah, and you see guys like Gurley, he just got his big contract, 4 years, $57.5 million, and $45 million in guarantees. That's he's going to have a $17.25 million cap hit in 2020, and that goes down to $13.2 in 2021 and $14.2 in 2022. But those are the type of numbers you're going to be looking at for a second Barkley contract. And man, that's just going to be a lot of cap space for a running back. And again, he can be really good, but if the other pieces aren't in place on the offense, then that's
it don't matter.
Just not going to work. Yeah.
Now, if they could get the other pieces in place, if they could have an offseason where they get on the ball and start hitting even just singles and doubles, to mix metaphors, because apparently that's what we do talking about sports. And they could build an environment where a young quarterback on a rookie deal could play like a franchise player and have a very good environment for that, which could let them pay Barkley eventually. But that's an awful tight rope to walk, especially for a team that hasn't shown that level of foresight.
Right. That's going to be an incredibly tight rope to walk. So when you look at what the Giants are right now, 1-5, we get Football Outsiders has them with a 10.9% chance at the top pick, which is the fourth highest. That's behind Arizona, Oakland, and San Francisco. They have a 47.7% chance at a top five pick, and that's the fifth highest. Really, they're not even the favorites for like the top pick if they were going to go in for a quarterback there. So now you're looking at, even if these teams in front of them aren't going to take quarterbacks, and if you look at the teams who are in front of them, Arizona just took one. Who knows what Oakland is going to do?
John Gruden might throw $1 billion at Peyton Manning to come back and play for him.
It fits his age demographic that he's looking for. But San Francisco has Garoppolo. Buffalo just traded up for Josh Allen. Whether that was a good decision or not, we don't have to get into that. But, you know, they have their quarterback. Indianapolis is right behind them. They have a quarterback, Cleveland. But there's teams that could still trade up. The Giants are not guaranteed to get their quarterback where they're drafting. And if that's the case, now you have to trade up for a quarterback. So you're using more draft resources to get this quarterback than you would have if you had just, you know, maybe taken a guy at two, or if you had traded back last year, you now would have that ammunition to use to trade up. You can also use that. And again, the Giants are without a third round pick in this draft, and I will say I am okay with that. I was completely pro taking Sam Beal in the supplemental draft.
Yes.
He's probably someone whose talent you were not getting with that third round pick in the normal draft. So I'm fine with that. But you have to take that into account. If that's something they have to eventually trade up for, you now don't have that third round pick as ammunition. So the Giants are not guaranteed to come away with a quarterback this year either.
No. And they could say they want to use next year to look at Kyle Lauletta, assuming they fold tent on Eli Manning and either he retires at the end of the year or they cut him and he retires at the end of the year or retires in 2019. You know, they could use next year to try and see what Kyle Lauletta has. You know, they're very high on him and he isn't a terrible fit for what Pat Shurmur wants to do on offense. You know, he's kind of a hot-rodded version of Case Keenum. But they could do that and kick that can a little bit further down the road again and maybe get into the 2020 draft, which could have, who knows, Justin Herbert might stay in college. And then you could also have Tua at Alabama or Jake Fromm at Georgia. You know, two guys I've had my eye on since last year. You know, I really like them. And you also never quite know who is going to emerge. People weren't talking about Carson Wentz 2 years before he was the second pick in his draft.
It's going to be interesting how they go about this quarterback decision, because if they do go with Lauletta and they give him a chance to play this year and they go into next year with him, and if he's not good, I don't think Gettleman and Shurmur get a chance to pick the next quarterback.
No, that might actually force the Giants to do what they probably should have done when they fired Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo, and that is well and truly clean house and set the franchise on a new course instead of retreating back to, you know, the glory days of yore.
There's a lot of decisions that are going to be made in this offseason, and they all go back to what really happened this past offseason, because that set everything up. The kind of playing around with trying to get younger and set this team up for the future while also trying to contend. And again, do not let anyone tell you this team was not trying to contend this year, because they were. This was not the plan.
No.
Some of us, and I will say I was one of them, saw this coming. This was not a good team.
No.
But this was not the plan. And so we're really going to have to look at what this team is going to be going forward, because there are big contracts going forward.
Nate Solder going forward. They've got Patrick Omame going forward. They're locked in based on their contract. Got Eli Manning. And then they have to figure out what to do with Landon Collins. And Sterling Shepard will be up right after him.
Right, so I was playing around a lot with some of the cap numbers, and if the Giants really, like, really wanted to strip down, you could take almost every big contract off these books. But you're left with not a great roster. So you could have a starting lineup of, I'll start with the offense, Kyle Lauletta, Saquon Barkley, Nate Solder, Will Hernandez, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, Odell Beckham, TBD at center, right guard, and right tackle, TBD at third wide receiver. And on the defense, you can have BJ Hill, Dalvin Tomlinson, RJ McIntosh. I kept Kareem Martin, you got BJ Goodson, Lorenzo Carter, Eli Apple, Grant Haley, Sam Beal, Landon Collins, and TBD at free safety. And that gives you about $67.6 million in cap space to work with. So that's moving on from Eli Manning, moving on from Olivier Vernon, moving on from Janoris Jenkins, moving on from Damon Harrison, moving on from Alec Ogletree, moving on from Patrick Omame. That's a lot of cutting.
And that is a ton of holes. Now, granted, yes, some of them are holes that need to be filled, just period. I am looking at center and right guard right now, and right tackle.
Right, and but when you look at, and I mean, this is the case for every year, when you look at, you know, free agency for offensive linemen, it's not a great year to be doing that.
Yeah, it's never a great year.
And yeah, that's how you come away with, you know, paying Nate Solder what he got paid. You're, again, if you're looking at the offensive line going forward, it's, you know, you're going to be paying top of the market prices for players who aren't exactly top of the market. You can look at Bobby,
or even close to it.
Yeah, you can look at Bobby Massey from Chicago, but you know, if you're, he's already actually one of the higher paid offensive linemen. If he hits free agency, you're paying him even more. So it's a tough place for this roster to be in, and it was clear this was going to take a while to redo and rework. But
I think they set
themselves that's not how the Giants approached it. That's what they're saying now, but that was that's just not what they were saying when this was happening.
No. When it was happening, and again, this is where one of the first points we made that, you know, what is the plan? You know, every move could be rationalized in a vacuum, but when Dave Gettleman came in like a wrecking ball and just completely blew up the roster while saying we're going to compete this year, which is contradictory actions and statements, they threw out the baby with the bathwater. They let players go who would have been useful and not terribly expensive. Right now we have John Greco at starting center. They had Brett Jones, who was good enough that they could let Weston Richburg leave, and then they traded him away because they signed Patrick Omame at 3 times the cost of DJ Fluker, and yet he isn't playing nearly as well as Fluker was. This is where you really have to wonder, was there a plan, or were they just making moves and spending money to be seen making moves and spending money to say, hey, we're doing something?
They made a lot of moves in the offseason, and there were just, you know, other moves that probably could have been cheaper and set them up for more success. You look at, you know, just coming in with Cody Latimer as the number 3 wide receiver. He was making $2.5 million this year. There were other options where you could have been better at outside receiver. Someone like Cameron Meredith, who was a restricted free agent with Chicago. He was coming off a knee injury, but pretty much the teams had figured he was going to be healthy. He only went for $2.7 million this year. He's on a 2-year deal. But I doubt this team even looked at restricted free agency as a way to get players, because teams usually don't. Restricted free agency is another high market inefficiency where could get players.
Back a couple of years, the Giants could have gotten Tony Jefferson for not much. He was on a restricted free agent contract, but with an original round tender, and as a former undrafted free agent, that basically just gave Arizona the right of first refusal. Right. And then that year, he balled out. You know, all the signs were there that he was ready to break out, and then he did. Right. And Arizona couldn't afford to pay him.
Yeah, that was the same thing with Meredith. He got an original round tender as an undrafted free agent, so there was no compensation. The same thing for Willie Snead in New Orleans. You know, maybe they didn't want to get someone who just played in the slot, but he could have been even a cheaper option. There were other ways to go around and getting more talent for this roster. I mean, going in and not signing, you know, someone like, I'm going to bring it up again, but Eric Reed in the backfield as a free safety. Right now, Eric Reed making $1.6 million. Curtis Riley's making $630,000. That is a $1 million difference for an upgrade to Eric Reed.
Which they aren't even on the same planet as far as what kind of upgrade it is.
There's a lot of what ifs we could do with this team, and I'm sure we could probably spend, you know, over an hour doing that. But I think when you look at what happened with whatever the plan was and what the plan turned into, it's just, again, we can just stress, it doesn't really seem like there was a cohesive plan going forward. You can take that. So I think we've done a kind of scattershot look at whatever the offseason plan and what was going in. And then when you see it translate to the field this year, it's been even worse and more jumbled than the offseason plan that happened is what has actually played out.
It's gone almost the way it only could have.
Right, but even someone like me who was down on whatever the plan was, a lot of the offseason moves, I at least thought there would be some semblance of at least an offensive structure that would look okay. But that clearly has not been the case. Whatever has been going on with the offensive line, we've, you know, talked about that plenty. Whatever's been going on with Eli Manning, we've talked about that plenty. But even just, even the scheme right now, Pat Shurmur was not hired to run an offense that looks like whatever the offense currently looks like. I spent like thousands of words in the offseason trying to like predict and translate whatever Shurmur was doing in Minnesota and how that would carry over to the Giants. And none of those words have come true so far.
No, they have, even with the offensive line being what it is, they have the personnel to be one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL, but they're just not schemed to play the way they are built. Look at the game plan against New Orleans Saints, or again against the Philadelphia Eagles. Two teams with questionable, exploitable secondaries. And I think all told, Odell Beckham runs 6 deep routes out of almost 20 targets, maybe even more than 20 targets. Saquon Barkley has what? Maybe one target or route run from the boundary as a wide receiver. Everything else is 5 yards or less run from the backfield. They're constricting themselves on offense.
These are topics we've discussed on almost every podcast so far, is the usage of Beckham, the usage of Barkley. Again, what are you drafting a running back second overall for if you're just going to treat him like every other running back in the league? That's not the point.
And that's not who he is. You draft him because he is different. He is more. He is a potentially elite wide receiver as well as an elite running back.
Right. So picking him now, we went back, said that's probably wasn't the best thing for the Giants to do for their long-term team building. But he's on the team now. So that pick is now, it's now a sunk cost.
It's history.
So it's, yeah. He's on the team. Now use him like he's supposed to be used. He took that screen against Philly for 55 yards. Use him on more screens. Use him on more actual routes. Even a bigger part of a problem is they have these players that they brought in and they don't even like know how to use them.
And that is what has really disappointed me in Pat Shurmur, the head coach. I want to like him. You know, I see the concepts in his play calling and I want to like it. I like how, especially earlier in the year, he was using vertical routes to clear out and create passing windows, which was a big part of the reason why Eli Manning was the second most accurate quarterback in the league. And then they've just kind of gone away. He was brought in supposedly as the or having an almost Belichick-like flexibility. You know, he was raised up under Andy Reid and then added to that some of Chip Kelly's philosophies and schemes, concepts, and then added to that what he learned underneath North Turner. But what we're seeing now is just none of that. Really, we're not seeing that kind of flexibility and way to scheme around his talent and scheme around his problems. Instead, we keep seeing them go back into that shell and just, there's no other way I can put it, just constricting themselves. They're, in a lot of ways, doing the defense's job for them.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent way to put it. They go back into a shell instead of figuring out how to attack. And even with the offensive line, with however much the quarterback maybe limits what you can do, there are ways around all of that. And the Giants just aren't coming back. Again, I've said the first sign of something going wrong for the offense, like, that's it. It's off the rails and it's not coming back. And it's insane to watch right now.
It really is. And it seems almost like on a bi-weekly basis, they will have one of these just terrible games where they are terrified of making a mistake, of putting the football at risk, of extending themselves to attack the defense. And they always they seem to come after games where they do just that and it is successful. You know, they had a really nice game against the Houston Texans where we both said, this is what this offense was supposed to look like. Finally, it's clicked. They can build on this and live up to the promise that we all saw. And then what do they do against the Saints? They crawl back into their shells like a hermit crab. Then the next week against the Carolina Panthers, they come out. And I think Eli throws four short passes all game. You know, he's averaging the only game this season where he's actually throwing past the sticks. And it works. For the first time since 2015, they break 30 points. They should have won that game. And along the way, Eli throws a couple interceptions. And what do we see on a short week? 4 or 5 days later, they're back in their shell looking worse than ever.
It's a mess all the way around. I don't think there's one part of this franchise right now that is not in some type of mess in some way. And that's not a great place to be in right now.
No. In his Valentine views, Ed laid the mess at the feet of John Mara and Steve Tisch. And I would say it should mostly be on John Mara's feet, because he's he is the one who is much more involved in the day-to-day decisions, and the Tisch family is much more in the background. Not to say they don't make decisions, because they're both involved in all of the big ones, but the Giants are mostly known as the Mara family business. I can't say that that's a wrong way to do it. It's something, a mess like this starts at the top.
Yes, it does. And especially when, as we're recording this, John Mara has appeared at the NFL owners meetings in New York. And let me read the exact quote. "I wish he'd create the headlines by his play on the field as opposed to what he says and what he does off the field. I think he needs to do a little more playing and a little less talking." That is John Mara on Odell Beckham. I don't know what the point of that is. John Mara saying that really adds nothing but like a little more dysfunction to the whole thing. And I can think of this Bill Barnwell tweet from the other day, who brought up Bill James, who's kind of the father of sabermetrics in baseball. And Barnwell's tweet was, "One of the smartest things Bill James ever noted was how bad teams blame their problems on their best players." I mean, that's where we are at the Giants and Odell Beckham right now. I don't care what you think of Odell Beckham and what he's doing off the field. He's not in like the top 20 of their problems right now.
No, I didn't particularly care about what he said when he said it on ESPN. Yeah, maybe his delivery could have been a little bit better, but ultimately he was A, not wrong, and B, it needed to be said. And see, he wasn't shouting it from the rooftops. You know, he wasn't going on a crazy rant calling into talk radio. He was very calmly saying the things we all know to be true. But I suppose football players are meant to be seen and not heard, even if they are right.
Even if they are right. And man, the thing that really bothers me about that Mara quote is him saying he needs to start playing. And Beckham's doing what he can, man. He's open. Teams are scheming against him. The Eagles, they ran like quarter half, and they had a safety just on Beckham over the top the whole time. And you know, Beckham did what he could against that.
And having all of his routes like within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage.
And when you're not being helped out by the routes being schemed to beat certain coverages, I mean, there's only so much he can do. Beckham man, Beckham is doing what he can. And
we saw him roast Jalen Ramsey in week one, and he could have had 200 yards all by his lonesome if they looked to him more.
Right. And when we look at, you know, expected points right now, and I'm going to just dive into this again, expected points added, which when it takes kind of the history of play-by-play and takes what a team usually gains from a certain part of the field, however much a player adds to that, that's their expected points added. Beckham right now on 73 pass plays, 16 expected points added, a win probability added of 45.9. That's more than Saquon Barkley on receptions, which is 14.1 expected points added. It's more than Saquon Barkley on runs, which is negative 0.44 expected points added total. When you throw to Odell Beckham, good things happen. You need to throw to Odell Beckham a little more. You need to throw to him better. And that's part of the problem, is whatever this offensive scheme is, whatever's going on this offense, it's not using the players in the right way. And that's something they really need to figure out for this season going forward. Because if not, then I don't know what you can be optimistic about when you change the players, when the players being used right now aren't being used in the correct way.
Yeah. And even if they get a new quarterback or a new offensive line, if they keep not using their best skill position players, then it's just going to keep looking like this, just with different names on the backs of the jerseys and, you know, different people to be angry at.
Man, if you were hoping we were going to talk through this entire process and come out with a positive outlook of where the Giants are right now, I am sorry to disappoint you, because that has not been the case. I feel like almost talking through this, I am less
getting more depressed
than I was. Yeah, and I'll be the first to admit I was not someone who was optimistic going into this season. I think I remember what we did preseason over-unders at Big Blue View. I'm pretty sure there were four or five of us who did that, and we put the over-under at 6.5. I think I was the only one who said this team's going to go under. So I will say I was not one of the optimistic people going into this season, but even this has been so far below my expectations. As much as this season might be kind of off the rails and depressing and underwhelming, I really like what is depressing and questionable is the possible future outlook of this team. I don't know if I trust the structure that's in place going forward to be what is able to turn around this franchise.
At least in the near term. When Dave Gettleman was hired, it was said, you know, trust Gettleman. You know, the Panthers were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Well, look at the seasons around that year. They were incredibly inconsistent and would bounce back and forth between having a pretty good winning season and a not great losing season. And that team was mostly Marty Herney's.
Yeah, and again, remember, Gettleman came in and Cam Newton was already in place at quarterback.
Luke Kuechly was already in place. The running backs were Jonathan Stewart, and I believe Mike Tolbert was already in place. Ryan Khalil was already in place at center. Greg Olsen was already in place at tight end. And he just added pieces to that roster.
Right, and when you look at what this team is going to need to do at quarterback going forward, Kyle Lauletta was the first quarterback Dave Gettleman ever drafted. Lauletta was Gettleman's first quarterback. And again, Dave Gettleman has never traded down in a draft. I don't know how you trust that going forward. I don't know how that was trusted to begin with, if I'm being honest. but I'm not sure how you can see what has gone on right now and trust everything for the future. And especially the way Dave Gettleman has tried to build this team right now, that's with his hog mollies and through the running game, is just...
Can we just eliminate that word from our vocabulary?
Yeah, we can, but it's a way he's tried to build a team in an era where passing is at its highest, its most efficient, and really its easiest in the history of the league. And this is now a team that's trying to build through ground and pound and be a run first team. It's insane. And because of how bad they've been one of the most pass heavy teams. But again, that wasn't the plan either.
And they're doing it in an era when the offensive linemen coming out of college, just they're trained to play a different game than what Dave Gettleman wants them to do. Very few schools even use 3-point stances for their offensive linemen. You know, they're almost exclusively, you know, RPO based, spread option, spread the defense out, and linemen only have to pass protect for 2 seconds. And, you know, if you're going to build a ground and pound team, you need players that are just really rare.
If you say rare, you probably do have that with Barkley, but like, how rare? And is rare so much better than everything else?
Eventually, you have to bow to reality. You have to recognize reality for what it is. And the game of football is changing. You know, the rules favor offense over defense. And you know, it frustrates the hell out of me because I love defensive football. But, you know, the rules, some of them motivated by player safety, others motivated by, you know, just improving scoring and, you know, making the game more enjoyable and putting up for people who like offensive football and putting up, you know, almost basketball numbers. You know, the game is becoming much more pass oriented. And you have to recognize that. Because otherwise, reality is going to slap you upside the face.
Right. Passing one is more efficient than running the ball. That has been the case for just about ever.
It's the advent of
so much, so much more the case now. Passing is at its highest, and you just have a front office right now that doesn't care. And I think that's one of the most concerning parts of this.
Especially since they have some of the best passing weapons around.
Yeah, when you're just looking at what the league looks like right now, and you have a team that's trying to build in spite of that and not going into it. And, you know, maybe that changes if they get a quarterback in this draft. But again, you know, who knows if that's going to happen? The draft is still a while away. So we still have a lot of time before that part of the rebuilding process is really front and center. And right now, there's not a lot to look forward to. And there's not a lot that is going right for this team in a year where they were expected to be better than they were. Now, and again, this was not the plan. And don't let anyone try to trick you into believing that this was what they had in mind, that this team was going to be set up with a high draft pick that could potentially give them a quarterback. That wasn't it. This wasn't some Sashi Brown, Cleveland Browns, like 3-year tank. That was not the case. This team is bad and set up to possibly get a quarterback in spite of itself. It's what it was. That was not the plan.
Long-term prediction, I'll put it out now just before we wrap up. By the end of the 2019 draft, Nick Bosa and David Edwards, right tackle Wisconsin, will be Giants after their first two picks.
All right, so I guess that would mean Kyle Lauletta is the starting quarterback. The details of that, I'm sure we will get into as this season goes on. This was just kind of a look at what this team is right now and how it got here and where it might go, which, you know, we honestly have no idea. So with that, on that positive note, we'll end there. Thank you guys for listening. Again, you can subscribe anywhere you find podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. if you can, please rate and review. That helps us out a lot and would be very kind of you. We'll be back probably later in the week, probably around Friday, to preview the Monday night football game. This team is on primetime again in Atlanta. So we'll be back later in the week to preview that game. Thank you guys for hanging out, and we'll talk to you again soon.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears in video games.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.